just hurtful, bitch. You're not controversial like you. You're just plain rude. You may have your exes caught up to you. I'm not the only one who had a problem with you. It's true. I look at my life and smile at the pool. And you. Not listening to good track. This bitch ain't even worth that. Little boy is a rat. Couldn't keep his eyes to the trap. Couldn't keep his fucking trap shut. So he put that shit up. All up in his own butt. Cause you know this trap is fucked up. Fucked it up. Should've known better when he told me Twitter was full of baloney. But I knew him to be only what the others told me. But then I saw him, what he was, that little tiny boy. He was a rat, didn't like anything that wasn't what he said it was. And it wasn't what he said it was. And it wasn't what he said it was. And it wasn't what he said it was. You're gonna hear what I have to say. No, you're gonna hear what I have to say. You're gonna hear it. You're gonna hear what I have to say. If I'm making you upset, you have to tell me. Just tell me. Else. You can't handle me, man. I'm not a man. Man, I'm a fam. Friend. And I'm not your fucking friend. I try to be kind. Cause that's I like. I'm really fucking nice. But don't you make me wanna get a fucking little piece of ice and shove it up your little fucking ass. You're an asshole. You're a fucking asshole. Asshole. This is not a diss track. No, this fucking bitch ain't worth that. He couldn't keep his trap shut. Now he's stuck up in his own butt. Yeah, this is not a diss track. Little prick ain't even worth that. Yeah, he couldn't keep his trap shut. Now he's stuck up in his own butt.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
And we're the Daves. I'm David Bedanek.
I'm Dave Campbell.
I'm Dave Frank.
We're the Daves.
And you're listening to CITR FM 101.9.
CITR Radio.
And these are the days of our lives. It is Friday, the 7th of May, 2021, and this is Dave Radio with Radio Dave on the radio. We're broadcasting live on CITR 101.9 FM and streaming on the World Wide Web at CITR.ca from an undisclosed location somewhere on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. On the program today, on this Mental Health Week show, New World Theatre presents a new play about raising a special needs child that asks us to examine the values we place on human lives. And a 91-year-old first-time songwriter brings us his song about joy and optimism from a hospice resident. It's the Radio for Shut-Ins version of Vancouver's go-to hour for local independent theatre, film, and music. And it starts right now. Don't touch that dial. So there's a guy named Dave Warnock. His website is called Dying Out Loud. It's the name of his book, too. He's got ALS, and it's a terminal illness. But he's a very optimistic kind of guy. And he likes to say that none of us is dying. We just keep living until we're not. Even someone with a terminal illness in a hospice situation is still living every day. Someone we know who really exemplifies that is 91-year-old Jack Roach. Jack is a resident of St. John's Hospice in Vancouver, and he's just written his first song. And since his daughter Jenny is a friend of the show, we have it for you. So, sung by music therapist Josh Denny Keys of Providence Health, here is My Beautiful Home, Vancouver by Jack Roach.
Vancouver, I am back. I'm back to my city by the sea.
Vancouver, I'm back to my city by the sea, with its great parks and high mountains, with their ski lifts that reach into the sky. Vancouver, I'm back to my city by the sea. I am back, I am back. This is where I'm meant to be. The mighty Fraser, it is calling me back to my city by the sea, to its beautiful parks and gardens by the sea. They wait for me. Vancouver, I'm back to my city by the sea, with its great parks and high mountains, with their ski lifts that reach into the sky. Vancouver, I'm back to my city by the sea. I am back, I am back. This is where I'm meant to be. Here I sit, watching the mighty Fraser meet the deep blue sea and the blue sky of Vancouver. This is where I'm meant to be. High mountains with their ski lifts that reach into the sky. Vancouver, back. This is where I'm meant to be. As I gaze out the window, here at my final home, the warm and loving St. John Hospice, where the river meets the sea. Vancouver, this is where I'm meant to be.
Boy in the Moon is a new play on now at the Culch and available online through New World Theatre. Based on Canadian journalist Ian Brown's memoir of life with his son Walker, who was born with a rare genetic disorder that makes him unable to talk, eat properly, or take care of himself, the play presents Ian and Walker's mother Johanna Schneller, as well as their other children, as they face, as a family, complex issues most of us do our very best to avoid. It was written by playwright Emil Schur, who was joined in conversation with the director of The Boy in the Moon, New World's artistic director, Chelsea Haberlin.
So I actually wanted to say back to you, Emil, we're so grateful to you for this beautiful story, because you were the one that took Ian and Johanna and Haley and Olga's story and created it for the stage, adapted it for the stage. So I'm curious, when did you first encounter their story and what made you think it would work well as a theater piece?
The questions are, of course, very, very much connected. It began with Ian Brown, as many people know, is a feature writer for the Globe and Mail. And he writes, I just think he's a very gifted storyteller. And he wrote a series extensive feature on Walker with some wonderful, compelling photographs. And that was basically the foundation of what became The Boy in the Moon. But even as I read that, the feature in the Globe and Mail, I was so drawn in to Ian's journey, even in the context of a feature story about trying to understand who Walker is. What's the value of Walker's life? Because I think we use wrongly a different yardstick when we look at the Walkers of the world, and that's our biggest mistake. And I think Ian's journey reveals that. And just to try to find, and again, I just mentioned the word subtext, which is a big part of theater, the idea that here's the story you see, but there's another story rippling beneath. And in what I perceive to be Ian's journey to discover, to really better understand the son he loved so dearly, but really couldn't completely understand because Walker couldn't communicate in traditional ways. Through that journey, of course, you reveal something about yourself. And that's what I found equally compelling. So in a way, when we say, what is the meaning of Walker's life? Or when Ian asked that question, he's really ultimately saying, what's the meaning of mine? Because what I assign to Walker's life says as much about me as it does about him. And I was really, really drawn to that. And you know, taking the bird's eye view, what does it say about us as a society, about how we treat the Walkers of the world? And as I was reading it, I just kept thinking there's a play here, and not a traditional play. What came to mind, in fact, is a BC connection. I had seen Michael Shimada's production. Michael Shimada is the AD, the artistic director of the Belfry in Victoria. And he had directed A Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion, a beautiful piece about basically losing her husband one day where he just keeled over after dinner one night. And what they did is they took that book verbatim and presented it on stage. So I thought, okay, it's possible to take a book that's not inherently dramatic. You know, this is, and The Boy in the Moon is told entirely from Ian's perspective as a book. But I thought there's something here. And I brought it to the attention of another artistic director, Lizanne Johnson, who was at GCTC in Ottawa at the time. And I'll never forget the conversation because I said, I think there's a play here, but I just know it will not be a conventional play. And she said, well, maybe it'll be a theatrical experience. And that phrase has always lingered with me. But I knew from the beginning, the subtitle of Ian's book is A Father's Search for His Disabled Son. And I thought, for a host of reasons, we are not going to just have a father speaking. We desperately need to hear from the mother and the sister and the caregiver and have this multitude of voices. If for no other reason, you know, one of the foundations, as you know, of course, of drama is conflict. And it's one thing to have an internal conflict and Ian to grapple with his own emotions, but to have Johanna there challenging, as we see in the play, in really meaningful and important ways, I just think was essential. So I just thought, and beyond that, being a father of two daughters myself and having the great privilege of being a writer, i.e. no commute to work, and being actively involved in raising my daughters, I thought Ian did not raise Walker alone. And Johanna's voice was essential to that. And then when you think of the next generation, as most people know, with parents of children with disabilities, they're going to be gone one day. And so you have the Haleys of the world, the siblings take on a responsibility, some would clearly call it a burden, that they didn't sign up for. So I just wanted to add all these different threads to the narrative.
Those perspectives of the other people in the family are really vital to to the story in general and to this play specifically. And I'm wondering how you went about approaching the family. Like I talked to Ian and Johanna a few days ago and they spoke about how for them as writers, telling their family's story has just always been a part of their relationship. They've kind of traded off on who gets to tell this story publicly. But it's something else entirely to invite a third party into your home and into your marriage and into the lives of your children. How did you negotiate that with them? And what was the process of bringing the stories of the other members of the family into the piece?
So there's a huge sense of responsibility of just honoring them as just human beings, honoring their collective story. But I think what really helped and what I was grateful for is that Ian and Johanna are both writers. And I think they, and in fact, I know they have a clear understanding of the process. And so that when you're a writer, there's a much less sense of ownership. You know, you're a public person by virtue of your writing. You're sharing stories with the world. And so I think I know they understand that at its heart, an adaptation of Ian's book would be just more of what they already do. They do share their stories through their narratives that they do. Johanna is a film columnist and a film critic and a screenwriter herself. Ian, of course, writes for The Globe. So there's that element of public sharing, if you will, of their story that they'd already done. Granted, not the story of Raising Walker. So I think once they were in that mindset, they were very generous in understanding. And they gave me carte blanche. They basically said, had I worked with somebody who wasn't a writer, I suspect they would have been, to my chagrin, perched on my shoulder, watching every word, saying, no, it's not like that. And whereas Ian and Johanna understand the craft of writing and the liberties that you take with it, ultimately with the goal of, does it serve the story? And so it was liberating. So I did, they were great. They gave me basically carte blanche. But I also knew I didn't want to, once I knew I had to crack it open and bring Johanna's voice in literally, because Johanna, as you know, is quoted in the book. And there are passages where, you know, she speaks, you know, verbatim as it were, which I wove in, but I knew I wanted to hear voices beyond what Ian shares with us within the book. But an example of Ian would have passages in the book that were given to Johanna in the play. But all this to say, in addition to the book, I interviewed Johanna a few times. I will not reveal this. One of the most, I find personally, because at one point you distance yourself from the work you help create. And of course, I've seen the play many times. And there's a time I forget I had anything to do with it. I'm just somebody in the audience. And I say this in the context of one of the most moving moments in the play come from a moment when I interviewed Johanna in her backyard. And it just really, really, it just resonated with me at the time. And there's something almost, which I want to let people know, there's something almost that I have to confess to, almost surgical to adapting the book, by which I mean there are times I had to stop myself because I think about structure. I have a wall full of post-it notes in different colors talking about setting and sound and character and dialogue, and it becomes almost like architecture. And I would have to stop and step back and think, wait a minute, these are human lives. This is a couple with a child, unlike any other, literally, of course, but beyond that, with challenges that most parents don't have to encounter. So I would have to step back and just remind myself of who they are and my responsibility to them.
That's responsibility to them. So it's so interesting. And what you say about who gets to speak is so resonant, because agency within the piece is something that we've talked a lot about throughout the process. Exactly. Like, who gets to do the telling of this story, you know? Absolutely. And Haley says in the piece, no one can speak for Walker. No one.
And that's a really important moment. And I'm glad she says that. She has that discomfort. Yeah.
And totally. And that you see that everyone in the story understands that. And also the story needs to be told. They agree it needs to be told. And so you talk about getting to speak to everyone in the family, but the person you can't speak to is Walker, because Walker doesn't speak. I'm curious how you approach telling, and you know, arguably Walker's the lead character, right? The whole thing's about Walker. How do you tell a story about someone who doesn't speak? How did you?
Well, I think, again, that speaks to the power of theater. And in some ways, there's probably, well, I'm willing to say this, I think there are elements of the play, the stage production, that give us a sense of Walker that the book can't. And, you know, it's nothing to apologize for, and I think Ian would agree. In the same way that, of course, the journey of a book, our relationship with a book where it's unmediated, just us and the page, is a different type of relationship and can impact us in a way that no other form of storytelling can. But in terms of theater and what it can do, and I think its power is that it can create presence through absence. And so, and you're doing that, of course, as director of the piece, and that, you know, you'll see how in the way, the very way the actors respond, in fact, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but in terms of staging it, but the way the actors respond to an absence, by which I mean Walker's not seen on stage, that was a conscious choice. Again, a director or playwright could have made a different choice. We're going to hire an actor who's going to play Walker. I mean, that opens up so many other challenges that I personally don't think are even worth confronting, to be honest, because it's not about the physical presence of Walker. It's about, almost you can argue, his spiritual presence, in the same way that ultimately we're all come down to that same core, our spiritual essence. It's not about what we're sort of packaged in. And so I think through, this does come to a bit of how we structure the dialogue, but how Ian and Johanna and Haley and Olga respond to Walker helps shape who the boy is. And so whether it's physically on stage, delivery, there's a one point I know where, I've got to be careful with spoiler alerts, but just in terms of silence, there are times when Ian will stop talking. And in that silence, we as an audience, I think, fill in that silence with our understanding of his relationship with Walker. And that shapes who Walker is to a great degree. So I think in our mind's eye, we actively, as audience members, I don't want to say create Walker, but we're actively involved in the portrait of who Walker is that is revealed through the play. And that can only happen with an audience. Otherwise, we're talking to a wall.
Yeah, 100%. It's so similar to what Ian and Johanna say about the piece of, well, and our experience from within it, that one of the inherent integral questions was for Ian, is Walker there? Like, yeah. Is there a boy in the moon? Is he there behind this? And, you know, the play goes all around in exploration of that question. And it's interesting to think about the way that we create our own reality in every scenario. You know, exactly. Conversations with a 2.5-year-old. How much of that is in my mind? And how much of that is really?
Totally.
Or our conversations with each other to any degree.
Exactly.
The questions that they ask about Walker are relevant in any interrelational scenario, any caregiving exactly. scenario. They're exactly. such big questions, you know.
Exactly. And how much is being received, as you say, exactly.
Yeah.
And what are we? I mean, it raises so many layers. I find that so compelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd want to say to an audience before they watch the piece?
That's interesting. I guess the word that comes to mind, I don't know, is the word uncertainty. So that, in other words, I'm always drawn to stories that don't have any type of a neat bow at the end, that are open-ended, that are not, where things aren't spelled out. The word uncertain, I think, is appropriate in terms of, if you're not sure even how to respond to the play. I mean, as I say, I've seen several productions, and sometimes there's complete and utter silence when the play ends. Now, this would have been in the days, of course, when we were right there in the theater with the actors. But all this to say, I think there's so much to process in the play, and hopefully to be processed for weeks, arguably months afterward. So the uncertainty can be, don't feel you have to completely understand it, that you have to feel you now know who the Walkers of the world are, that you have a greater understanding of people like Walker. I don't think that's what the play is all about. So much of it is, it's to me, to dwell with questions can be profoundly meaningful, and not feel that we have to have the neat and clean answer. And so one of the things I introduced, although it was all Ian and Johanna's words, was I wrote to them and I said, if you could ask Walker a question, what would you ask? And here we go back to subtext, the subtext being he can't answer. Well, that's part of the whole power of the question itself. And so they wrote back, they sent me questions, and those questions have now been woven into the play. So it goes back to, I think there's a lot of room for growth in the world of uncertainty. I think certainty in and of itself, it leaves a lot of closed doors. So it's just, I guess it's another way of saying, give yourself the freedom to sit with the story after it's ended.
Special thanks to Chelsea Haberlin for allowing us to present her interview with Emil Schur. The Boy in the Moon stars Marcus Youssef as Ian, Megan Gardner as Johanna, and Cynthia Youssef as Haley. And you can see it online until May 9th by going to theculch.com.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Let me refresh your memory. Russians. That's right. Russians. Ruskies. Communists. Communists. Oh, now you remember.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is Russian Tim, and I'm the host of weekly punk rock radio show called Rocket from Russia. Every Tuesday, 10:30 to 11:30 a.m., Rocket from Russia is aired on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, or CITR.ca, anywhere where internet is paid for.
starting to get sick of sucking news out of the eyeballs and the nostrils. Second-hand sensations just have never been. Longs to meet another brain without the use of buffers. Dreaming, scheming, screaming for some unimpeded love.
Moving out the brain.
Against mine, and lips touch lips and nerve ends meet. Contact,
single, single, single.
Brains are still so far apart. Oh, cruel separation, telegraphing loneliness through miles and miles. Against each other and to men. Go, men. Go, men. Go, men. Go,
losing out the brain. Losing out the brain. Losing out the brain. Losing out the brain.
The 20th anniversary edition of the Doxa Documentary Film Festival is streaming online across Canada from May 6th to 16th, and several Vancouver filmmakers are premiering their works. First up is Someone Like Me by Sean Horler and Steve J. Adams, Vancouver filmmakers who are interested in stories about social and criminal injustice, particularly with regards to the LGBTQ2+ community. Someone Like Me is a special presentation in the Rated Y for Youth program. Spotlighted in Doxa's Justice Forum, The Meaning of Empathy is directed by friend of the show and a former stage daughter of your host, L. Maya Tailfeathers, a Vancouver-based filmmaker and actor and member of the Kanai First Nation in southern Alberta and the Sami in Norway. I hope I said that right. Whose recent works include the acclaimed feature The Body Remembers When the World Broke Open. And Doxa is also hosting the BC debut of Into Light, a short doc shot in Yellowknife by West Vancouver's Shiona McDonald, a Canadian Screen Award-winning director, writer, and producer. Between May 6th and 16th, you'll be able to watch all these films in the Doxa 2021 film program from your own comfy chair. Films will be available to watch on demand for the duration of the festival. And for all the details, including list of the films, ticket packages, and how to watch from the comfort of your home, go to doxafestival.ca.
Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. The string that passed down from the Lion Kings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. The string that passed down from the Lion Kings. Wolf, your turn king, descendant of the outcasted who turn sing before the talk of gun clips and bling bling. The vibrations of the world would change.
beats with one string, one mic. One way, one life, one God, one sight, one struggle, one fight. Yo, despite all the stressing and the strife, yo, I still spit the knowledge right. Ever since his first buck, the whole world was struck. Now you're banging his tunes in the back of your truck. He's the one that inspired me when I was growing up. The one man with one string, city lodge and Yamanaja.
Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. The string that passed down from the Lion Kings. String the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. Listen to the sound of the string the sing brings. The string that passed down from the Lion King.
It resonates like the sound of a sword swing from Baba Deep Singh. The Bumbi ring I cut with precision. Punjabianas ho so darandi paskarati. Oba azuchi kardo and listen. It's the sound of the dish up in your ear with the tabla sarangi duck. You lose all your fears and worries. Turn up the radio, what do you hear? Yo, it's Kaldeep Monic. He's on it, plucking that dumbi so supersonic. I'm talking about the ring Amar Singh brings when you listen to Jamkila sing. Yamala Jat Muhammad Sadiq. So unique, make you feel happy. And Punjabi, Punjabi is so neat.
So the Cold Reading Series is back Monday, May the 10th at 7 o'clock. It's a live stream Zoom event. You can do it from home. And if you are, if it's something you're not familiar with, you haven't heard about it before, go to their website, coldreadingseries.com. It explains the whole process about it. But basically, in a nutshell, it's an opportunity to get some practice doing cold reading. And cold reading is just somebody hands you a script and you go for it. Sometimes you get a chance to skim over it, but most of the time you just go for it. You make some choices on the characters you want, and you present it. It's great for writers, too, because it gives you an opportunity to hear your words being read out loud. It's one thing to read them on the paper and hear them in your own head, but once you hear an actor saying the words, you make all kinds of new discoveries. So it's been going on for about 25 or 30 years, and it's just more and more popular all the time. And I can't say enough about how great cold reading is. So check it out. It's coldreadingseries.com. The deadline for registration is tonight at 9 o'clock, so make sure you get on board right now. Once again, it's at coldreadingseries.com.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Are you one of those, I really want to make a podcast? People? Well, we've got a huge opportunity to share with you. StoryHive is giving away 10 grants of $10,000 each to aspiring podcasters in BC and Alberta. Since 2013, TELUS StoryHive has funded and supported emerging creators with mentorship and guidance from the National Screen Institute, bringing hundreds of creative Western Canadian projects to life. This time, they're taken to the airwaves with their inaugural podcast edition, dropping on November 4th. StoryHive is looking for original nonfiction podcast concept pitches from BC and Alberta residents. Make sure you apply before December 2nd at storyhive.com and you could get $10,000 to get your podcast off the ground. That's storyhive.com for all the details.
Time now for the Dave Radio Call Board, featuring auditions and calls for crews, musicians, and other contributors for productions around Metro Vancouver. It's our belief that auditions announced here should be open to artists of all cultural, sexual, gender, ability, and other identities. In fact, we encourage everyone to read for everything. Once again, Delta Youth Theatre is getting ready for their next production. Delta Youth Theatre is a pre-professional youth theatre program for dedicated students who want to learn from professionals and have fun in a focused and safe environment. Students will rehearse and perform a musical that requires strong singer-actor skills, and you'll be encouraged to discover your own unique talents and how those can be translated into a dynamic stage performance. This year they're doing Matilda by Roald Dahl. It's going to be happening in November and December, and the auditions are happening now online until the 1st of June. So if you want to get involved, you can find out more information by going to deltayouththeatre.com. Theater in the Country Online is doing Much Ado About Nothing by William Shakespeare. It's going to be happening at the end of the month via Zoom. And this is a costumed reader's theater presentation. So you'll be reading the script, but you'll be wearing the costumes. It's going to be cool. Zoom auditions are happening this weekend. You can find out more at their website, which is theaterinthecountry.com/auditions. And if you you fill out the form, and if you are invited to audition, they'll send out sides for you and tell you how to do the audition. Once again, that is theaterinthecountry.com. And Promethean Theater is also doing a Shakespeare show. They're doing King Lear at the Jericho Arts Center in October. They're holding auditions on the 31st of May and also by Zoom. And right now they're casting the character of Gloucester. Not Gloucester, as my grade 12 English teacher was insisted on saying. It's pronounced Gloucester. And Gloucester is a nobleman, loyal to King Lear. Their fate is in many ways parallel to that of the king. Gloucester misjudges which of their children to trust, and they appear weak and ineffectual in the early acts when they're unable to prevent Lear from being turned out of their own house. But they later demonstrate that they are also capable of great bravery. So Gloucester is a really meaty role to take on. They are asking actors of all gender identities who are interested to audition submit an audition tape with two contrasting Shakespearean monologues, and you can send it all to iscl96@gmail.com. And if you want details on these or other audition notices, as always, go to VancouverActorsGuide.com or the Vancouver Public Library at vpl.ca. And if you have a notice that you'd like read on the air, you can share it on the Dave Radio Facebook page, or you can email DaveRadioPodcast@hotmail.com.
The
doctor says, take those pills, you'll be alright. I know that you will. Nothing wrong with all of the edges of a two-shirt mind. You'll be just fine. So I choke them down and I lose my head. The sweet decline to the softest stare. I turn my back, but I heard what they said. They say, sweet, sweet girl, go back. Maybe I'm off the rails. Oh, maybe I'm off the rails. Somewhere between here and Montreal, I lost my grip, I lost sight of it all. I slowed myself from a sprint to a crawl, and now my back is pinned against the wall. He docked me down, told me I was good, loved me still like I knew that he would. And in the shadows where I once stood, I see a light and lights and weathered wood. Maybe I'm off the rails. Maybe I'm off the rails. You need me to be, but don't put me behind the wheel. No, 'cause I'm gonna steer us right off the rails. Doctor says, take those pills, you'll be alright. I know that you will. Nothing wrong with darling, the edges of a t-shirt will be just fine.
That's our show. Thanks for spending your lunch hour with us. Music today was by Josh Denny Keys and Jack Roach, Warren Porter, The Judy, Red Herring, Battle Cat featuring DJ HMD, Yukon Blonde, and Sam Lynch. Our theme music is by The Ventures and The Tornadoes. Remember, if you want to keep in the know about theater happenings and not happenings in these wacky times, check out Theater Wire, createastir.ca, and Colin Thomas's Fresh Sheet. And listen to the Arts Report every Wednesday at 5 right here on CITR. If you missed any or all of today's show or want to relive glorious moments from the past, you can search on our podcast archives at CITR.ca, and you can also find us on player.fm. And remember to like, share, and subscribe because Sharon deserves it. Stick around. Audrey's up next with Too Dreamy, followed by Beppe Crespin at 2, and our very own star on the BC Entertainment Walk of Fame, Nardwuar the Human Serviette, at 3:30. Dave Radio will return next week at this same time. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
We are the Jocelyn Pettit Band, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
I could have been a better son. I wish I weren't the only one. Too busy stuck having fun. Pull the trigger, baby. Give you everything.